Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 1.
And our mission today is to really unpack this opening. We're talking world creation, the unique cosmology, and of course, the amazing birth of Sun Wukong, the Monkey King himself.
Exactly. We've got excerpts from that first chapter, the one titled, "The Spiritual Roots, Sprouts, and Bears. The Nature and Life Are Cultivated on the Great Path." It sets such a tone.
And it jumps right in with something pretty big, pretty grand right from the start.
It really does. These opening lines, it seems to link something personal, like inner work, with everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nurturing spiritual roots.
Yeah.
All beings looking to benevolence. All things becoming good. It's quite the opening statement.
And then the kicker? Hey, if you want to understand the universe's creation,
you need to read Journey to the West. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So not like a scientific treatise or some dense philosophy.
It's a novel. A classic fantastical journey. That's apparently where the secrets to cosmic creation lie.
Unexpected, to say the least. It makes you wonder, what is in Journey to the West that connects to the Big Bang or, well, the origins of everything?
Right. What kind of insights are supposedly hidden in there? And then, almost immediately, it gives us this poem.
Ah, yes, the poem. Since Pangu broke the primordial chaos.
And from that, the clear and turbid were separated. Order from chaos.
So Pangu, for anyone maybe not familiar, he's the cosmic giant in mythology, right? Separated heaven and earth.
That's the one. The very act of creation, bringing structure to the formless void.
And the poem continues, before that separation, chaos reigned. Heaven and earth all mixed up.
Vast, empty, unseen, just pure potential maybe? Or just pure chaos?
So you've got this link. Cultivating your mind nature, your inner self, that prippet.
Uh-huh.
And then bam, Journey to the West holds the key to creation.
Right.
Which started with Pangu bringing order, separating clear from turbid, out of this massive unseen chaos described in the poem.
It's quite a chain of ideas in just a few lines. It's suggesting that understanding yourself, that inner work, might actually mirror or connect to how the universe itself came into being.
Hmm.
From that chaotic state to, well, order.
Huh. So the personal journey reflects the cosmic one. Is that the idea?
It seems to be pointing that way. That maybe the principles are related somehow. That self-cultivation isn't just about you. It's about understanding fundamental reality.
That's a pretty profound thought. That getting a handle on the merit of creation isn't just an intellectual exercise.
No, it involves engaging with this story, this epic journey, and maybe implicitly undertaking your own inner journey. It really does. Between the micro-personal cultivation and the macro-cosmic creation. And Journey to the West is somehow the bridge.
Or the manual, maybe.
Yeah, and challenges us to see this classic story not just as fantasy.
But as potentially holding keys. Keys to understanding existence, right? From that initial, that undividing chaos.
Before Pangu brought order.
Mm.
It frames the story as deeply significant.
How often do we dismiss old stories, myths, you know, allegories as just stories.
Right, as primitive or irrelevant to, like, quantum physics or cosmology.
Exactly. But what if texts like this are suggesting these narratives offer a different kind of insight, a unique lens on those huge questions about reality?
Yeah, could these ancient ways of explaining the world hold, I don't know, surprising truths about the fabric of the universe that maybe we've overlooked? It's definitely something to think about.
The whole deal.
And then we get this timeline, which is kind of mind-bending. Yuan is 129,600 years.
Yeah, and that's divided into 12 huis, each 10,800 years long, linked to the earthly branches. It's vast.
Almost impossible to grasp. But then, okay, the text connects this huge cosmic cycle to a single day. Why do that? Why link the immense and the tiny?
Well, I think it's about showing interconnectedness, you know? A core idea in Chinese thought.
Yeah.
The universe's patterns echo in our daily lives. Macrocosm, microcosm.
Right, right. It's not just dates on a calendar. It's a pattern.
Exactly. A recurring cycle. And the text walks us through it from chaos, the first light stirrings Xiao Yang wrote about.
Ah, yes. That quote about the winter solstice. One yang stirs, but all things are not yet born. Beautiful.
It is. And then it lays out the stages. Heaven opening and the Zihui, sun, moon, stars appearing.
Then the earth solidifying in Xiao. With the five elements showing up, water, fire, mountain, stone, earth. Are those the basic building blocks here?
Essentially, yes. Not just physical stuff, but the fundamental forces shaping reality. Their appearance marks the shift from, let's say, the abstract to the concrete. order emerging.
Okay, and then comes Yang, and life appears, humans too, establishing the three powers, heaven, earth, humanity. We hear that a lot. What's the significance?
It means the cosmos is complete, basically. And humanity isn't separate. We're an integral part alongside heaven and earth. There's a sense of balance, interdependence. Humans have a role.
Such a huge stage set for our main character. And then, bam, the focus shifts from cosmic time to geography. Four big continents. Why these four, and why zoom in on East Purvavidya?
Well, the four continents idea, that comes often from Buddhist cosmology, which was a huge influence. East Purvavidya is often seen as maybe more natural, idyllic, a fitting place for someone like Sun Wukong to be born.
Makes sense. So within this continent, we get the country of Aeolai near the sea and Flower Fruit Mountain.
Ah, yes. Flower Fruit Mountain.
And it's not just any mountain, is it? The text calls it an ancestral vein, existing since chaos was split. That's quite the pedigree for a mountain.
It really is. It tells you this place is special. It's ancient, powerful, a nexus point, you could say, where extraordinary things can happen because it's so connected to the origins of everything.
And the description. Majesty awing the jeweled sea, crimson cliffs, wondrous peaks. It sounds incredible. Teeming with life, phoenixes, unicorns, everlasting flowers. Why emphasize that constant vitality?
Because it sets it apart, doesn't it? It exists outside normal time, normal decay. It's eternally vibrant, a sanctuary of life, the perfect cradle for a being destined for more than just a normal life.
A place outside time for a timeless being, maybe? And right at the top, the magic stone.
The stone.
And the measurements.
Yeah.
So specific. 3 Zhang, 6 Qi, 5 Kun high, 2 Zhang, 4 Qi around. You mentioned these aren't random.
Definitely not. 365 corresponds to the degrees of heaven, 24 to the solar terms. The stone itself is like a little map of the cosmos.
A microcosm, yeah. So the being born from it is already linked to the universe's structure.
Exactly. It prefigures his nature. And it goes deeper, the 9 orifices, 8 holes.
Right. Matching the 9 palaces and 8 trigrams. What do those represent, briefly?
They're key concepts in divination and cosmology, directions, elements, universal forces. The stone being aligned with them just doubles down on its connection to cosmic order. It's like it has the universe's blueprint inside.
Wow. Okay, so this cosmically aligned stone, soaking up the essence of heaven and earth, develops a spiritual womb.
Like the universe itself is gestating this being.
And then it bursts. A stone egg appears, round like a ball, and then the wind hits it.
And it transforms into a stone monkey, fully formed.
Instantly. Not a baby monkey, but ready to go. Why the wind? What does that signify?
Wind is often life, breath, spirit, transformation. Here, it's the catalyst. It animates the egg, brings the life force. It's a birth, but also maybe a spiritual activation.
And he's immediately capable, learns to crawl, walk, bows to the four directions. And then his eyes, that golden light.
Yeah, shooting right up to the Celestial Palace, alarming the Jade Emperor himself.
Quite the entrance. What's that show of power telling us?
That he's not ordinary, obviously. His birth is a cosmic event. It gets heaven's attention immediately, foreshadowing much.
You can almost hear the celestial alarms going off. So the Jade Emperor sends his scouts, Thousand Mile Eye and Wind Accompanying Ear.
Celestial intel gatherers, basically.
And they report back. Yeah, it's a stone monkey down on Flower Fruit Mountain. Light's fading now. He's eating and drinking. Pretty matter of fact.
It is, isn't it? Maybe a bit of celestial detachment, or perhaps they see stuff like this more often than we'd think. It shows a disconnect, anyway, between how momentous we see it and how heaven initially reacts.
And the Jade Emperor's reaction is just incredibly chill. Creatures born from the essence of heaven and earth are nothing unusual. He just dismisses it.
Not strange, not worth making a fuss about. Talk about underestimation.
You think that dismissal comes back to bite him later?
Oh, absolutely. It's classic dramatic irony. The all-powerful ruler overlooks the seemingly small thing that will eventually shake his foundations, sets up all the heavenly drama to come.
Okay, so heaven's not bothered for now. The stone monkey joins the other monkeys. Eating, playing, living the good life. In the mountains, no calendar. Winter ends. The year's not known. It sounds idyllic. Timeless.
It's an important phase. It establishes his initial state, natural, innocent content. Builds his community. It's the baseline paradise before the yearning starts.
Right, the contrast is coming.
Yeah.
And that paradise leads to the Water Curtain Cave.
Yes, the discovery.
Hot day. Monkeys by a stream. curious about the source, they find this amazing waterfall. A stretch of white rainbow rises, 1,000 fathoms of snowy waves fly.
Yep.
Gorgeous imagery.
It is. And the waterfall acts as a barrier, right? Hiding something. The challenge they set, who dares go through, it's a test of courage.
A chance for a leader to emerge.
Exactly.
And guess who volunteers?
Our stone monkey, naturally.
He leaps through and finds a bridge, not water. And beyond it, this hidden cave, emerald mosses piled like blue-white clouds floating like jade. It's like a ready-made home.
It's a sanctuary, a reward for his bravery, perfectly suited for them, suggesting it was almost meant to be found, a special place within the already special mountain.
He's ecstatic, runs back, tells the others, reminds them of the deal. Whoever went in and came out safe gets to be king.
And they agree immediately, bow down to him.
And he becomes not the stone monkey king, but the handsome monkey king, Mayhew Wang. Why the change? Why handsome?
It marks his shift, doesn't it? From just being unique to being a leader. Accepted, admired. Handsome adds charisma, maybe a growing self-awareness. He's not just the stone one anymore.
So he rules happily for hundreds of years.
Mm.
Paradise found, right?
Yeah.
But then suddenly he's sad.
Yeah. Out of the blue. The Monkey King, right in the middle of all this happiness, is hit by, and it's triggered by the thought of death, he thinks.
Essentially, if I die one day, wasn't this whole life pointless? I won't get to enjoy it forever. It's that sudden dread of it all ending.
Wow. Okay, so even in paradise, that fear creeps in. It really does resonate, doesn't it? That basic fear.
Absolutely. It's powerful. And he doesn't just sit with it. He wants to do something. He wants to escape Eiqi.
Yan Wang Laozi, the king of hell.
The king of hell. He wants to escape his control, to jump out of the reincarnation net, break the cycle.
So it's not just about not dying. It's about escaping that whole system of judgment and rebirth.
Precisely. It's about achieving a different state of being altogether. And what's interesting is how this desire mirrors, you know, broader human concerns we see everywhere.
Okay, so a monkey wanting to take on the king of hell feels like a tall order. How does he even figure out where to start?
Well, that's where another character comes in. A shugaban. A gibbon. And what does this gibbon know?
The gibbon basically gives him the crucial intel. It reveals there are beings who are outside Yan Wang's jurisdiction.
Really? Who?
Buddhas, immortals, and gods, or holy sages. These three categories.
Buddhas, immortals, gods. Okay.
And the gibbon explains they have hu ke boom.
Which means they
dodged reincarnation. They aren't subject to birth and death, and they live as long as the heavens, earth, mountains, and rivers. Basically, they're eternal.
Ah. Okay, so that's the path. That's the answer he was looking for.
Exactly. This is the key moment, the potential way out.
How does the Monkey King react? I bet he's thrilled.
Oh, completely. The text says he was just overjoyed, full of delight.
And he decides right then and there.
Instantly. He says, basically, tomorrow I'm leaving you all. I'll travel to the ends of the earth. I have to find these three types of beings and learn how to be immortal.
Learn the secret of eternal life. Wow, that's some serious determination. What about the other monkeys?
Well, their reaction is interesting, too. At first, hearing he'll leave, they're heartbroken. They're all weeping, covering their faces.
They don't want him to go.
Right, but then they seem to understand the importance of it. They start applauding, ee-ee, saying, ee-ee, like, excellent, well done.
So they get behind him. They see why he has to do it.
It seems so. It suggests maybe they share that fear, that hope.
Mm.
His quest becomes sort of their quest, too, in a way.
That makes sense. And the text gives a bit more context about his current situation, right? Before this realization.
Yeah, it mentions he's currently free in many ways.
Right.
He's not subject to human laws, not afraid of other animals.
So he has a kind of freedom?
A kind of freedom, yes. But it's limited because, as the text points out, Us, Wu Ma Dijin.
So when he gets old and weak, Yan Wang is waiting in the shadows. That freedom isn't absolute.
Exactly. His current paradise has an expiration date, ruled by mortality. That's the underlying tension.
So this whole story, this Monkey King's journey,
It's
really a powerful metaphor, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's using this narrative to explore that deep, maybe fundamentally human, maybe even broader than human, drive to overcome our limits, especially the ultimate limit of death.
And it suggests that maybe, just maybe, it's possible if you seek out the right wisdom, the right teachers.
Precisely. It holds out that hope, identifies those paths, the Buddhas, the immortals, the gods, as the way.
Through this really engaging story of a monkey king, taps right into that timeless human desire for immortality. It shows the fear, the hope, and even points to specific paths believed to lead there.
It's a fascinating glimpse into how these ideas were explored long ago.
Definitely. This is it. The quest begins. Yeah, the other monkeys. They're all for it. Plan this huge feast to send him off. Loyalty.
Shows the community he built.
Next day, he builds a simple raft, pushes off, heads for southern Jambudvipa. Alone. Seeking the path. And the narrator hints his journey will succeed, right? He is sure to meet one who knows.
Who can explain the source and make all laws understood? Yeah, definite foreshadowing. It tells us this isn't just a whim. It's his destiny unfolding, leaving comfort for purpose.
But southern Jambudvipa, it's not what he hoped for, is it?
Not really, no. He gets there, sees humans, but they're all busy with, you know, worldly stuff. Making money, seeking fame, ambition.
Riding a donkey, longing for a fine horse, holding the rank of minister, hoping to become a king.
Only worried about the toil and trouble of food and clothing, not fearing the summons of the king of hell.
When will the striving for fame and gain ever cease? Early to rise and late to sleep, with no freedom. Posterity inheriting wealth and high position is plotted, but not a single one is willing to turn back.
Not the spiritual path he's looking for.
Spends 8 or 9 years wandering, getting disillusioned. It highlights the gap, doesn't it? Between his innate drive and typical human concerns.
It does. Shows how different he is. And maybe a little commentary on how hard it is to find genuine spiritual guidance in the everyday world.
So he crosses another ocean, the Western Ocean, gets to west of Paragadanya, and there he hears someone singing.
The woodcutter, singing this very Taoist-sounding song, mentions immortals, the Yellow Court Sutra.
The Monkey King must have been over the moon. Finally, an immortal.
Right. But plot twist, the woodcutter says, oh no, not me. My neighbor taught me that song. He's the real deal.
An immortal named Patriarch Subhuti lives on Spirit Mountain in the Slanting Moon and Three Stars Cave. Close, but not quite there yet.
It's a crucial encounter, though. The woodcutter is the guide, providing the exact info he needed, creates anticipation. The path isn't always direct, is it?
No, it seems not. The woodcutter points the way south, 7 or 8 li, and the Monkey King finds it. This cave looks amazing. Mist and haze scatter colors. Sun and moon reflect light. Very auspicious.
And the name of the place? Spirit Mountain, Slanting Moon, and Three Stars Cave.
What's the deal with those names? Spirit Mountain sounds obvious enough.
Right. Ling Tai, Fang Kun, Shan. Ling Tai and Fang Kun both relate to the heart mind, the center of consciousness. So a place for inner cultivation.
And the cave. Slanting Moon, Three Stars, Shi Yu, Sang Xing Dong.
That one's more mysterious. One interpretation is that the characters for Slanting Moon and Three Stars visually resemble the character for Heart, again, pointing to mind cultivation.
Interesting. So he gets to the entrance, sees the inscription, and a boy comes out, an immortal youth.
Leads him inside to meet the main man, Patriarch Subhuti.
The Monkey King is ready, bows down, asks to learn the way. But Subhuti's kind of harsh at first. Questions where he's from, calls him deceitful. Why the cold shoulder?
Could be a test, you know? See if he's really sincere after coming all this way. Or maybe highlighting just how unconventional this student is, literally born from a rock. Doesn't fit the usual mold.
But when the Monkey King explains his origin stone birth, Flower Fruit Mountain Subhuti's attitude changes. He gets it. Recognizes his unique nature.
Sees he's naturally formed a product of heaven and earth.
And then, the big moment. He gives him a name. Surname Sun. Religious name, Wukong.
Sun Wukong.
What's the meaning there? Sun comes from Husun, meaning monkey, but also sounds like infant, and Wukong.
Wukong means awakened to emptiness. Hugely significant. Points right towards Buddha's Taoist goals of understanding reality. It's his entry into the lineage, his new identity. He's not just a force of nature anymore. He's a disciple on a path.
And he's delighted. Good, good, good. Today I finally know my surname. Please give me a given name. He finally has a proper name. Sun Wukong.
And that's where the chapter leaves us, newly named, eager to learn the Tao from the patriarch. A perfect pause point.
It really is. So we've gone from the Big Bang, essentially the creation of this whole universe, the specific geography, this magical mountain.
The incredible birth from a stone, the initial dismissal by heaven, his life as king.
That sudden existential crisis, the decision to seek immortality, the long search.
And finally arriving at the feet of a master and getting his name, it's an incredible amount of ground covered.
It really sets everything up, doesn't it? The cosmic scale, his unique origin, that inner drive for something more. You can see the epic journey taking shape.
Absolutely. What stood out most to you going through it like this? That mix of cosmology and character right from the start.
I think it's that blend, yeah. And also just how quickly he becomes dissatisfied with paradise. That yearning is so powerful, even when he seemingly has everything. It makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. What is true contentment? Is it just living forever in bliss? Or is it about understanding, about, well, awakening to emptiness, like his name suggests? His drive raises big questions about meaning.
Definitely food for thought. Is immortality just not dying? Or is it something deeper, a different state of being?
Profound questions sparked by a monkey born from a rock.
Only in Journey to the West.